Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday. It's June 17th. Currently 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City. We've got 61 in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Yeah, good morning, Wasatch back. We're looking at pretty calm skies as we head out early this morning, but we'll see some changes into the afternoon. There's a fairly strong cold front that's going to sweep through, not packing much moisture, but strong in the sense it's going to really impact our temperatures. Overnight tonight into Tuesday, most of you likely alerted that there is a freeze watch actually in effect or issued for tonight into tomorrow morning due to the very cold air that's arriving with this front. So highs today will be in the low 70s for Park City, upper 70s for Heber. We'll see partly cloudy skies this afternoon. The front moves in this afternoon as well. We'll bring some blustery winds, could gust as high as 30, 35 miles per hour. Have a slight chance of a stray shower or storm. Otherwise, should clear out pretty quickly. Not expecting much, as I mentioned, as far as moisture. Temperatures down to about freezing for Park City tonight. So if you've got some outdoor vegetation that's sensitive, of course, to the cold, likely need to cover that up tonight if you don't want any impacts there. About 31 in Heber for an overnight low. Temperatures tomorrow, just 62. Sunshine will take over after some of the cloud cover later this afternoon and evening. We will see partly cloudy skies into Wednesday and warming temperatures. So strong south flow should help us rebound pretty quickly after just 62 on Tuesday for the high. Mid-70s are expected and into the low 80s on Thursday. We'll see a mix of sun and clouds by the end of the week as well. Another slight chance of a shower on Friday. Moisture is going to start trickling up from the south. A little bit of monsoon shower activity for the eastern part of the state, but Park City could see some of that as well. About a 30% chance right now on Friday of seeing showers and storms, and a slight chance into the weekend with partly cloudy to mostly sunny skies. Temperatures still above average, 83 on Saturday and 87 on Sunday. Similar pattern for Heber, of course, near 70 for the high on Tuesday, 81 on Wednesday, warming into those mid to upper 80s through the end of the week with a chance of showers and storms Friday, with partly cloudy to mostly sunny skies over the weekend and temperatures climbing to 93 on Sunday in Heber.
Okay. All right, Nate, thanks.
You bet.
Hey, just a heads up, Park City is nearing the final stages of the first phase of the Main Street Waterline Improvement Project. Today, crews will be completing the tie-ins to individual properties along the 500 block of Main Street. Crews will also continue to replace the pavers along the west side of Main Street. Paving crews are already busy beginning milling the trench areas where that new line was installed, patch paving. The impact areas will follow today. No delivery access to the project area today. Delivery drivers hopefully have been notified. Pedestrians are being asked to stay on the sidewalk due to the fact that hot asphalt is being poured in the roadway. Crosswalks are available for pedestrian crossings. Also, Main Street from Heber Avenue uphill will not be repaved until the third phase of the waterline replacement is complete. That's not expected until the summer of 2026. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Peter Tamai, a development partner, who discusses plans for the redevelopment of the Doubletree Yarrow and a preview of tomorrow's open house to which the community is invited. Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher in with an update on some of their summer programming. And Snyderville Basin and Recreation District Director Dana Jones will be introducing the new Executive Director of the North Summit Recreation District, J.C. Diston. Taking a look at some local news now, the Latino Arts Festival in Park City is a celebration of Latino and Hispanic cultures. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the festival showcases traditional dancing, art, and food.
The Arts Council for Park City and Summit County hosted the Latino Arts Festival, which KPCW sponsors, this weekend at Canyons Village. The Canyons Village stage was the focal point throughout the festival as it featured traditional dances and music from all over Latin America. Aralee Garcia is the executive director of Viva Mexico Folkloric Ballet and Viva Mexico Ballet, respectively an adult and children's dance group showcasing steps from different Latin American countries.
We try to represent our brothers and sisters from different cultures and share the joy and just bring excitement to other people. Ballet Folklorico de las Americas, it's actually a legacy group.
That means the group is one of the first of its kind formed in the Salt Lake Valley. It's been around for almost 40 years. Garcia said her group has students from all over Latin America, as well as non-Latino students. She said traditional folkloric dancing promotes a connection between the dancers and the audience. At the end of her group's performance Saturday, young dancers helped other kids in the audience learn a traditional dance called La Raspa. Parents and other audience members clapped along as the boys folded their arms behind their backs, the girls held imaginary skirts, and all stepped along with the music. Once the kids were finished dancing, Aztec Indian dancers followed. Nazario Segura led the group called Tlecoat Aztec Dancers. He said Tlecoat means fire serpent. Each Aztec dancer was adorned in elaborate regalia with vibrant colors, beads, and feathers. Segura's regalia represented the white eagle and was modeled after an Aztec emperor's.
My regalia is a replica of something that one of my ancestors would have been wearing back in the old days. Back in the old days, we all wore precious stones and metals, silver, gold, you know, jade, and all these other precious stones.
Segura's headdress was the largest in the group, extending out and around him nearly to the ground. White rooster feathers hung from the center of the headdress, and medium and long pheasant feathers fanned out to the sides. All the Aztec dancers wore seeds on their ankles that shook in time with each step. Segura said the seeds oil is a medicine for rheumatism and arthritis, so the dancers have them on their ankles to soothe any swollen joints. The Aztec dancers performed on stage and on the grass. Segura said some dances can't be performed on a stage because they need to have a connection with the earth.
So it's the Mother Earth and the sun that has to have that connection with everything in between. It's everything in between that we need to take care of as well.
A group called Esencia de Mexico performed cultural Mexican dances next. Artistic director Carla Sean said the nonprofit's mission is to showcase the beauty of Mexican culture through traditional dance and music.
I grew up here in the States, so I didn't really have much knowledge of what my culture was until I was a teen and I joined a folklorico group. And I feel even now we should be showcasing and keeping our traditions alive.
Sean said folkloric dancing goes back to Aztec times. The heart of folkloric dancing is having your feet mimic the beat of the music, which is why her group wears shoes with special nails to tap along. The Latino Arts Festival also showcased art from 30 Latino artists. Alison Martinez Orocho, a Puerto Rican-American artist and youth program coordinator for the festival, showcased her art and led a free workshop for kids. She taught kids how to make Puerto Rican vejigante masks.
Vejigantes are a folkloric character, and they are symbols of joyful resistance in Puerto Rico. And they wear these masks that are traditionally made out of coconut husks or paper mache. But here with the kids, I use paper, I use cardboard, whatever we have in our environment.
Martinez Orocho said Latino is a general term, so the festival is a great way for visitors of all backgrounds to learn more about various Latino and Hispanic cultures. And since Park City has a robust Latino community, the festival is an opportunity to learn about each other. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, as Park City continues to move forward with the small area plan for the Bonanza Park area, the owners of the DoubleTree Yarrow Hotel plan are looking for its plans to be approved to make way for a demolition and redevelopment of the property. On the phone with more, I have Peter Tamai. He's a development partner with the Yarrow Hotel Ownership. Good morning, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so where are we with the redevelopment plans before city decision makers?
Well, we've made our first application to planning in 2022, summer 2022. And since then, I've been working with, you know, the professional planning staff in the city and planning commission. We've had one work session two work sessions, and we're having a public hearing scheduled on the 26th to consider our application. But in advance of that, Leslie, tomorrow night at the Yarrow, we're hosting a community open house from 5 to 7 p.m. And we welcome everyone in the community to come learn about the Yarrow, understand there'll be a couple presentations at 5:30 and 6:30 so that we can help show our vision of where we are today with the development plans that are super exciting to me.
So 2 years, that seems like a long time. Is that normal?
In Park City, it's not that unusual. Takes a long time. And this is obviously receives, rightly so, a tremendous amount of attention. This is that corner of Kearns and Park Avenue is a extremely prominent, potentially one of the most prominent locations in town. It's been dominated by, you know, this workhorse of the Yarrow or Doubletree, or I believe it started its life as a Holiday Inn in 1977.
Yeah.
For a long time, and it's you know, very significant to see potential change there.
So give us the bones of this development, the parameters. As you mentioned, it's at the corner there of Park Avenue and Kearns. How many acres are we talking about? What's the current zoning? Things like that.
Yeah, so the site itself, Leslie, is nearly 4.5 acres. It's 4.46 acres, so it's a large site. It currently has a 182-room hotel, and, you know, that's surrounded, as we all know, by a sea of asphalt, which holds 185 cars. You know, many in the community have been to the Yarrow for various community events because there's meeting space in the ballroom. You know, it's where many of our 2002 Olympic announcements and visioning and all of those kinds of things were held at the Yarrow, as have been some of the small area plans. So people are familiar with the property. But it was built in a different time and place, and the vision moving forward is to try to make, both upgrade the lodging offering there, but retain some of those, the community space, and actually really enhance it by pulling the development away from, the roads, replacing the sea of asphalt with a nice, broad green belt, which has a multi-use path, and then some shops and retail along the south side, making it really more relevant for the local community, as well as updating our offering for the transient, for our visitors.
So are you looking for a rezone in order to build what you want to build there?
No, it's not a rezone. Pursuant to the general commercial zone, Leslie, this is, hospitality is an allowed use. Because of the size of the property, it's subject to what's called a master plan development application, an MPD. So as part of the MPD, they address heights and setbacks and densities and uses. I think significantly, Leslie, one of the big things is that, currently the Yarrow, there's no, it's just a hotel today. And our vision for the future includes a big chunk of affordable housing, in addition to, as I mentioned, some kind of more local relevant shops and restaurants, including a restaurant with a rooftop bar. So I think it will become little bit more of an anchor point to what is envisioned for some of the rest of Bonanza Park.
All right. Now, do you face any restrictions just because you're along two state routes, 224 and 248?
Yeah. So naturally, there's a, in addition to the underlying base zoning, which, it calls for a 35-foot height limit, and actually very modest setbacks. The setbacks required in the general commercial zone are not too big. Because of its location on Park and Kearns, we're also subject to what's called the frontage protection zone. And the frontage protection zone increases those setbacks from the standard 10-foot setbacks to 30 feet along Park and Kearns, where nothing can be built. And then between 30 feet and 100 feet, it requires a CUP for construction in that zone. So we've made application for both the MPD and the CUP to allow us to make some improvements in that area of the frontage protection zone. Today, we all know what exists there is just asphalt. There's about a 6-foot, 4 to 6-foot band of grass, and then it's just parking until you hit the building. And in the future, and I'm super excited, if you come and come to the open house tonight, you'll see some imagery, and you'll actually be able to see a fly-through video along the path and how different the bike and pedestrian experience surrounding the property would become if we're successful.
All right. Well, I think you just told me that there's a 35-foot height limit. The drawings I
Correct.
Saw.
There's a 35.
Okay.
Excuse me?
The drawings I saw show a 4-story building. That's taller than 35 feet, no?
That's correct. And that's so part of the MPD process, Leslie, contemplates height exceptions. And, you know, there are six findings under which the Planning Commission, six findings that the Planning Commission needs to find in order to issue a height exception. And it contemplates the benefits, you know, the trade-offs between height and sprawl. And essentially what we've proposed, and you can see from the renderings, is instead of a long, continuous, low building that creates kind of a wall, much like the Yarrow today, where it's just a fortress with a wall all the way around it, what we've proposed are these kind of five building pods. They're highly articulated. They're only connected at the first floor. So we've really clustered the development into smaller footprints. And in order to do that, and in order then to turn so much of the site, nearly 75,000 square feet of the site becomes publicly accessible open space. In order to do that, it requires us to stack some of those uses that cleared those areas on top of the others. And so we're asking for a height exception to allow four-story buildings, but they're highly, you know, heavily articulated in an area where, you know, we're not adjacent to any, you know, single family residential, or, you know, right now we're surrounded by wide asphalt streets and wide asphalt parking in the heart of a commercial, you know, in the heart of a commercial zone.
Yeah.
So the height is probably not going to impact anybody there.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned affordable housing. Are we really talking affordable housing, or are we talking more workforce housing here? What's being built? Dormitories or actually one and two-bedroom units?
No, definitely not dormitories. What we're talking about here, I mean, it's, you know, by definition, pursuant to the Park City Code, it's affordable. It will be deed-restricted affordable housing. But the units we're offering here are full apartments, and they're designed for our workforce. And you know, they're smaller units. They're not big. You know, they mostly one-bedroom units, but they're a full residential building apartment, and they're designed for year-round population. These aren't seasonal. They're not dormitory. This is for, you know, the people who are, you know, we hope living, working, playing, and thriving in the heart of Park City. And it's such a great location because you can live, as many of us know, and one of the reasons the Yarrow does so well today with our guests is because of its location. You know, you can walk or bike most places because it's right in the heart of everything.
All right. So how many of those apartments are you building? Because you have, what, about a 20% affordable housing requirement?
Correct. You know, so there's a very, you know, it's a complex formula based on either percentages in the case of a multifamily project, or in employee generation in the case of a hotel or other commercial uses. And the housing authority applies the most restrictive. So you go through, in this case, because it's a hotel, that's the more restrictive. It creates the largest number of demand. You go through, calculate the employee generated by the project, and then calculate a housing requirement. And we exceed that housing requirement with what we're proposing today are 60 units of deed-restricted affordable housing.
Okay. Does that get built above ground?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No. In fact, it'll likely be the first vertical construction you see on the site if we're successful. And it's all of the affordable housing is contained in one of the pods, so that, you know, I think it's important that people have permanent neighbors. You know, that it's a true residential building designed for permanent residences, and it even has its own little private roof terrace, you know, only for the residents of that building, as opposed to the lodging uses that might be, that it'll happen at the in the condominium hotel units.
All right. So do you keep the name the Yarrow? The DoubleTree never made it.
The DoubleTree, you know, we're nearing the, you know, we have, we're nearing the end of our franchise agreement with Hilton, you know, they want to stay in the market, and we're in active discussions with Hilton about renewing with Hilton, either for the existing property or hopefully a new property. But no, I suspect there'll be a new little bit more contemporary name for the property. Today we're calling it just 1800 Park, which is our address. And but I think the location itself is, you know, dictates something kind of more reflective of what we're trying to create, which is a new image for that corner.
Okay. Once again, an open house will be held tomorrow at the Yarrow Doubletree from 5 to 7. And I guess you're encouraging people to stop by. You're even serving a little bit of food and some beverages.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, of course. There'll be, you know, we'll have some food and beverage there. And there'll be many members of the design team. We'll have lots of images. We'll be running some videos and actually give two presentations, as I mentioned, at 5:30 and 6:30, kind of running through the entire application in effort to try to answer questions and get people to get excited about the property. I think I'm personally very excited. I'm a bike commuter in town, and that 4-foot sidewalk which exists around the Yarrow is one of the scarier places in town, crossing Kearns Boulevard, and the idea of being able to be on a nice wide multi-use path separated from traffic there is just so exciting to me personally. I really hope we can find a way to get this done.
Yeah, I just go for flat. It's like on a cantilever. Yeah. Hey, one thing came to me. How much conference space is going to be part of this? Again, as you mentioned, the Yarrow has been, you know, one of the larger areas that people can gather for conference space. Is that being kept?
Sure. Yeah, we're hoping, you know, I think this space will be a little bit more, little better designed. And, you know, the square footage right now, I believe we're at 7,500 square feet, which is roughly the same that we have today in total. So, I think the desire is to keep, you know, it's been a, one of the more successful meeting spaces in town, very important to the lodging community overall, and we hope to be able to continue that tradition.
Okay, Peter, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Great, thank you, Leslie. Appreciate your time.
Peter Tamai, again, a development partner for the redevelopment of the Doubletree, also known as the Yarrow. And again, that open house happening tomorrow, 5 to 7, at the hotel location, with presentations happening at 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. We're in the studio now with an update from U Sports Alliance. I have Executive Director Emily Fisher. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Let's start with some filming you apparently did with Outside Interactive and Jaguar Land Rover North America. What was that all about?
Yeah, another exciting opportunity that came out of the Defender Service Awards. We have spent 2 days filming with Outside Inc. and Land Rover over the past month. We did 1 day with our after-school program and sort of capturing the car in action, transporting kids and bikes and all of our different venues. And then we spent another day doing some interviews and driving our Defender all over town while they were filming it. And so this will be a 3-minute piece that will profile YSA, and it will be used to promote this year's Defender Service Awards. And YSA was the only nonprofit picked to sort of promote this. So just another exciting opportunity that came out of winning the Defender 130. So it was, we're excited that they're gonna profile us and sort of show how we're using the car.
Yeah, so where would rest of us be able to see this spot?
Yeah, so I think Outside Inc. and Land Rover will send this out, promote it nationally, just to try to get as many nonprofits participating in the Defender Service Awards. So we'll make sure to push it out through our channels. I think early July is when the contest is going to open. At least that's when it opened last year. It's around that same time. So they'll push it out then, and we'll do the same.
Yeah. So have you seen a finished product, or it's not that?
No, we have not. And the whole filming process is something obviously we're not used to. It's a lot of hurry up and wait for lots of different pieces and parts, but excited to showcase our organization and the car.
Yeah. So was that part of the deal of winning the Defender, or you actually get paid because of industry standards?
You know, it was a new opportunity that was brought to us from Outside Inc. and Land Rover. They both wanted to feature us, and we feel like it's great PR and national exposure. So I'm really happy to do that with them. And feature not just YSA, but Park City and the Wasatch Back and all the awesome opportunities and venues we have here.
Okay. And you have to get everybody to sign off on film rights. Yeah. All right. Something new this summer, the Deer Valley Introduction to Downhill Mountain Biking. Very popular, selling out quick, huh?
Yeah, we just started a new summer program with Deer Valley using their trails and doing a downhill mountain bike clinic. It's just a one day. We're going to do one at the end of June and then hopefully another one later in the summer. We're actually partnering with 43i Foundation. So the registrants will receive a free downhill mountain biking helmet. The 43i Institute was created in memory of Ken Block, and we're looking for opportunities to partner together. They're looking for organizations that run programs and provide opportunities for kids. So it's just a really great partnership, and we feel like it's really organic, and it sold out really quickly. So exciting to see that program with a lot of momentum.
Yeah, so just people just need to kind of pay attention to the website. Is that how they're going to find out?
Yeah, and sign up for our newsletter. So our newsletter will push that out, or our social media channels.
Yeah, Ken Block, of course, a Park City resident. This 43i, is it a local foundation then?
Yeah, so the 43i is local. They have some partnerships here in town. They're looking, they have a great platform with lots of different ideas about how to support brain health, kids getting active, motorsports, wheeled sports. We do a lot of those programs at Woodward, so hoping to partner with future programs and figure out ways that we can get more kids active in their concentration areas. We really have areas of overlap. Their website is 43i.org.
All right. It's time for another round of the scholarship scheduling. What do people need to know about this?
Yeah, so this is our Stein Erickson Endowment. These are our Dare to Dream scholarships. So these are for athletes that are in one of our seven partner clubs. We provide scholarships to keep those athletes in their programs. They're for program fees, travel, and training. So the scholarship window is open from August 1st to August 31st. It's important to note that all of these scholarships are need-based. The scholarship application is a little bit more robust because these scholarships are a bigger dollar amount. We're trying to make sure that every student that wants to be a part of one of these seven member clubs can have the funding to do so. So they can apply again from August 1st to 31st, and it's for their annual program fees. So families that are facing challenges keeping their children in one of those winter sport clubs are encouraged to apply. Those seven member clubs are Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners Hockey, Park City Speed Skating Club, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Utah Olympic Park Bobsled and Skeleton, Wasatch Freestyle, and Wasatch Luge Club.
All right. Any idea how many scholarships you actually hand out?
It's somewhere between 90 and 110. We're shooting to give out somewhere close to between 175,000 and 200,000 over the year. As I said, the fall scholarships are for their annual program fees. The spring scholarships are if for athletes who have qualified something that wasn't in their annual plan. So they have a fantastic season. They qualify for a national event, an international event, a junior world, something like that, and don't have the funding to participate. They can apply again in the spring for that spring funding.
Okay, and because these are need-based, it would range then in terms of maybe there's a partial scholarship and then the parents would have to pick up the other part?
Yeah, the you know, winter sport fees when they get to that elite level are really pretty high, so we rarely can fund 100% of their need. So yes, it's just to try to help them stay involved and be able to make sure. We really look at it as something that without the scholarship they wouldn't be able to participate. So it's really a need to have, not a want.
Okay. Again, more information is online.
Yeah, it's on our website, just ysausa.org. And again, August 1st to 31st for those annual fees.
Okay, hard to believe, but we're talking about Jan's Winter Welcome. What do we need to know?
I know. So, yeah, Jan's Winter Welcome is just right around the corner. It's our 44th annual, if you can believe it. It's scheduled for Saturday, October 26th at Stein Erickson Lodge again, and we're happy to be partnering with Stein's again on this legendary event. We have our opportunity drawing package. So this year it's a trip to Belize, which we're really excited about. It's a week stay in a new oceanfront, 5-bedroom, 6-bathroom oceanfront house. It's got a pool. It's got a private chef. It's got all kinds of things. But that 5 bedrooms, you can use it for family reunion, vacation with your besties, vacation with your family. So many different fun ways to use this house. And then a $4,000 flight credit. And we're really appreciative. Intermountain Health is the sponsor again of the opportunity drawing package. So thank you to Intermountain for sponsoring that package again this year.
Okay. And again, this drawing raises a bunch of money for the clubs.
Yeah, so the most important thing to remember about the opportunity drawing package is that each ticket is $50, but that $50 goes back to the club that you indicate when you purchase it at 100%. So Leslie, if you buy a ticket to support Park City Ski and Snowboard Alpine that somebody you know might be associated with, that $50 goes back to that program at 100%. So it's a great way to raise money for those 7-member clubs and hopefully win a trip to Belize. We've had a lot of local winners lately, which is really fun to see local people win this package. But you can have grandma and grandpa, you can have supporters all over the country, and it usually raises over $100,000 for these partner clubs. So a great way to support those.
All right. And you've got tickets going on sale when for the
So
event?
Tickets, yeah, everything will go on sale after July 15th. And again, any updates, you can sign up for our newsletter or check out our website, ysausa.org. And yeah, we can find out all the information on Jan's Winter Welcome.
Okay. Ticket prices keep going up, but you can get it.
Huh? Ticket prices have actually stayed the same. So table costs are $5,000 for a bronze table, $6,000 for silver, and $7,000 for a gold table. And then individual tickets are $550. This has been the same, I think, since 2021. So, when you look around at all the other events happening in town, feel like we're competitive with those as well.
Okay. Anything else, Emily?
No, just want to say thanks again to the community. Driving around in the Land River has been incredible, transporting kids, and to everyone out there who voted and voted every day. I just want to say we are genuinely so grateful and thankful for you.
Okay. Emily Fisher with Youth Sports Alliance. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
We're in the studio now with an update from Basin Recreation. I have District Director Dana Jones, and she's joined by the newly hired director for the North Summit Recreation District, J.C. Diston. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Leslie.
J.C., maybe just start with you. The Summit County Council last week approving your employment contract. Maybe just start by telling us a little about yourself.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me. And look forward to this opportunity. But yeah, I was born and raised in Summit County. I grew up in Wanship. Both sides of my family are born and bred here in Summit County. I have 3 daughters and married and love sports. Basketball is probably my favorite, but we are looking forward to bringing some exciting new things to North Summit Recreation.
Okay, so is this a full-time job?
This is the full-time job. I am the first full-time director for North Summit.
Yeah. And how many other employees do you have, or do you have to do it all yourself?
Right now, I'm on my own.
The board has been operating, however, for a while, and it's been kind of been put together by this volunteer board. Do they have kind of any marching orders for you at this point?
They've kind of given me full rein to, you know, hone in and do what I think is best for the community. I still have to have board approval, but they are letting me kind of bring in what I think is best for the community and especially the kids.
Yeah, and so your salary and the future of the district is based on a tax increase that was implemented?
That is correct.
All right. How much money does that raise every year?
I'll have to check the numbers correctly, but I believe it raised $70,000 for the year.
Okay. So you don't have a whole lot
Our budget, no, our budget is very small for our community.
Yeah, yeah. So what's on the to-do list then? I mean,
we've got some donations from various vendors throughout the community, great businesses that are willing to donate. We're going to start doing some fundraising for each program. But the biggest thing is donations from the community have helped us immensely. Summit County Health Department donated for our baseball and softball program this year. And we've been applying for grants to help with future programs as well.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got baseball, softball, basketball. What else can you offer at this
point? We're going to do soccer. We do basketball, flag football. We're going to start doing dodgeball tournaments for the adults. We're looking at maybe doing a kickball tournament this summer, maybe during 24th of July. We're looking at cornhole. Pickleball, we are doing a new, at our Beacon Hill project, we're going to have pickleball courts, basketball, multi-purpose field. So hopefully in November of 24, that will be finalized and we'll have a big party and then we can start implementing pickleball and pickleball tournaments.
All right. So the programs are run out of where? City Park at Colville? I mean,
currently we're using the North Summit School District's facilities, their football field, basketball courts, stuff like that. We will continue to use their courts as we don't have our own building yet. But once our multi-purpose field is finished, we can use our own fields.
Okay. And so you expect that to be done this fall then, you said?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And maybe let's just talk a little bit about regional coordination, Dana. I mean, how can you, how do you envision working together with North Summit? Are you really two very separate organizations?
You know, let's talk about the regional coordination, like you say, and that's not just North Summit and Basin, but it also includes Park City Recreation. I mean, we're all like one big community, and we all kind of share the same backyard and the same amenities. We want all of our folks that live, you know, in Summit County to have ability to use all these amenities. So I live in Wanship also, so I also sit on the North Summit Recreation Board. So I get to, I was so excited when they hired JC because she is awesome.
Okay, but what do you see the future being though, right? I mean, because again, you've all got your own budget. So what, just advice? Is that what you can provide, or?
You know, it's not just that. It's the ability to, you know, not duplicate facilities. Park City has an ice arena. That means North Summit doesn't have to build an ice arena, and Basin doesn't have to build an ice arena. You know, and, you know, Basin has the indoor field house. Okay, we probably need another indoor field house, but maybe that's something that North Summit can build, you know, in the future. So that we don't have to duplicate efforts, so that we are all actually working together to provide as much recreation as we can without, you know, drawing lines and saying, you know, this is mine and this is yours. And we want the community to be able to take part in a lot of different types of recreation, and we can do that when we all work together to provide the different types. So,
So any plans then to kind of coordinate quarterly meetings or, you know, biannual meetings between the four districts? Because, of course, we've got South Summit as well.
We do. And actually, I really like that idea.
Yeah, I do too.
So I think that is something we can certainly do. We, Basin and Park City and Mountain Trails meet once a month to talk about trails. So there's no reason why we can't put something together to talk about recreation and moving forward. Because, you know, Park City, Basin, North Summit, we want to provide recreation for everyone. So we want, you know, if the community has a need and is not able to do things financially, North Summit and Basin both have great scholarship programs. And Park City has a sliding fee schedule where, you know, depending on there's a reduced fee based on the AMI. So we want to be able to provide that recreation for everybody, and we want people to take advantage of those scholarships and know that they're there and come and use some of our facilities and some of the programs.
Yeah. So, again, that multi-purpose field, I mean, what is it going to have? I mean, in terms of the fields, a couple of soccer
fields? Yeah, so we're going to have a softball field and then a football field that can use before, you know, soccer, flag football, et cetera. So that will be our multi-purpose field.
Okay, I mean, eventually restrooms, bleachers?
Yeah, so on the site right now, currently there already is a restroom and pavilion, can't think of what it's called, playground that's already been established there. That was built, I believe, in 2012. So then we just added on to this facility.
Okay, and what kind of demand is there for recreation in North Summit?
There's a huge demand for it. Right now, there's suddenly there's nothing for the kids to do. There's no, we're having to, you know, borrow the facilities from the school, which they've been very generous in letting us do that, but they also have programs that they need to run as well. So we can only use it at convenient times. And so this is a huge advantage for these kids to be able to have, you know, their own programs. We don't have to wait for the field at 6 or 7 o'clock at night. We can have it throughout the day, during the summer, or right after school.
All right. Maybe just tell us, when does the board, recreation board, meet? Is it monthly?
It is. Every month on the second Monday of the month.
Okay. And where do you meet at?
The Colville Courthouse at 6 o'clock.
Okay. And I guess that if people are interested, now's the time to kind of jump in, right?
Yeah. We're looking for 2 board members to join. So the application is on the Summit County website. We'd love to have people volunteer to be on the board.
All right. Do we have any news about e-bikes, Dana, about what we're going to do in the future?
That's a good question. So at our board meeting last week, Basin Recreation Board approved the draft ordinance that we put in front of them to go to Summit County Council. Our goal is to listen to the public. We did do the e-bike survey. We got over 2,000 responses from folks, you know, telling us what they thought about not only e-bikes on the transportation trails, but also on the e-mountain bikes on some of our single track soft surface trails. And so, you know, 2 of the things that we heard, one of them was that they want to see Park City and Basin Recreation have the same rules, so that because our trails are contiguous. I mean, you get on one and you don't know whose trail you're on, and you don't have to know. It shouldn't matter. So our new ordinance follows Park City's. So there is e-bikes are not allowed on single track trails, with the exception of over 65 and mobility disability folks can then ride the e-bikes on the single track trails. The other thing the public says, they wanted to see a speed limit. And so we have proposed a 15 mile per hour speed limit, and especially this is gonna be for the transportation trails. We don't want people driving basically, you know, motorized vehicles down our transportation trails. We want them to be safe for everybody, walkers, people pushing strollers, and people riding bikes. So that ordinance is going to go in front of Summit County Council next week. And if they pass it, then it'll go into law, basically, and we will start enforcing it. We are working with Park City right now to get signs that look the same. So all of our signs will be the same. Everything will be consistent across the board as far as that goes. So.
All right. And then in order to receive that little, how are you going to identify those 65 and older or disabilities of some sort?
You know, there isn't any rule that says you have to have something on your bike or anything like that. So we are not implementing any kind of a courtesy tag program. Of course, you know, we will, honor Park City's program, which they still have in place. But it really is, you know, an honor system. And if we start to see a lot of problems, we'll, you know, I did reach out to the sheriff and had him take a look at the ordinance, and he was good with it. And so if there really starts to be a problem, we'll see if we can, you know, partner with some of the deputies in the sheriff's department to get out there. And at that point, they would be able to request.
So apparently there's these electric motorcycles, and the reason I ask is because I was traveling southbound on 224, and there was a kid, I guess it was an electric motorcycle, I don't know, he was on the bike path, full downhill helmet, traveling 48 miles an hour on the path. I mean, who's after people like that? I mean, I think he should have been on the highway, right?
That is correct. And he shouldn't have been going 48 miles an hour on the bike path, that's for certain. Yeah, there are the different classes of e-bikes. There are what is considered an electric motorcycle. I think people have called them Surons. We do have some challenges with those. There are, every once in a while, we get different neighborhoods calling us because they're racing around neighborhoods and through parks and things like that. So, you know, we do work with the sheriff's department, and I'm sure Park City's doing the same to regulate those, because those are motor vehicles. Those are not bicycles.
All right. So they do need to be on the road.
Yes. And following the rules of the road.
Right. It was, I couldn't believe it. He was pulling ahead of me, actually. Yeah, so interesting. All right, ladies, anything else you want to mention?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, again, congratulations to you, JC. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Well, the board planning the Snyderville Basin's first ever cemetery says it has found a suitable location. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that it is going to be located near the RTS Trail on the way to the Utah Olympic Park.
The Snyderville Basin Cemetery District Board said it wants to put in a cemetery on the right side of Olympic Parkway before the RTS Trailhead parking lot below the Aspen Grove. Board of Trustees Chair Max Greenhall says a geotechnician has already analyzed soil samples from the area.
Summary was that there's no bedrock, pretty good soil. We went down about 7 feet on most of the digs. And so we're pretty pleased with the site overall.
It's about 10 acres, which he says could last a century. They'd offer regular burial plots and spaces for cremains. And green burial could be a possibility as well. The district doesn't have the authority to levy taxes yet, but Summit County Council could grant that, Greenhall says. He added it likely wouldn't get that power until next year and would keep the tax burden as low as possible. In the meantime, board members have been donating their own time and securing pro bono work. Greenhall says they've been lucky to have a professional planner, Krista Cassidy, landscape architect, Pete Gilwald, and two lawyers, Daniel Whitehurst and Bill Oshinsky, on the board. Gilwald's neighbor was the geotech who analyzed the soil. Board members are holding off on a formal vote to choose the Olympic Parkway site for now while the county clears up legal concerns. Greenhall says county attorneys believe deed restrictions on the land jointly held by Summit County and Basin Rec allow for a cemetery, but the attorneys also told him the state of Utah would prefer the cemetery operator owns the cemetery land. County officials may need to subdivide it and transfer it to the cemetery district. The Summit County Council would need to vote to approve that division at a future meeting. The cemetery would be the Snyderville Basin's first. Previously, residents had to go to Salt Lake City or elsewhere for burial, as Park City's cemetery is reserved for residents and is almost full. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Division of Wildlife Resources says that residents can hunt cougars without restriction all year in Utah. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the DWR will not recommend changes to that controversial 2023 law.
A bill passed in 2023 legalized the unlimited year-round hunting and trapping of cougars. All that's needed is a basic hunting license. However, cougars are still considered protected wildlife and harvests must be reported to the DWR. Some lawmakers argued the provision was needed to keep cougar populations in check, but wildlife groups like the Mountain Lion Foundation filed suit, saying the law was unconstitutional. Brent Lyles, executive director of the Mountain Lion Foundation, said the bill was a, quote, hastily written and ill-conceived law that opened up the door for every mountain lion in Utah to be killed. Despite the controversy, the DWR is not recommending any changes to cougar hunting right now because harvest rates haven't significantly changed. DWR Game Mammals Coordinator Darren DeBlois said the team wants more information before it suggests any updates.
We didn't want to make any drastic changes and collect data for another year and then make some determinations about how those legislative changes and how our rule changes last year are impacting cougar harvest.
Biologists have been monitoring harvest rates since the law went into effect in May of 2023, and DeBlois said so far harvest numbers are similar to previous years. From May 2022 to May 2023, 512 cougars were harvested in Utah. From May 2023 to May 2024, that number was one less at 511.
The biggest difference is we saw fewer numbers of cougars taken with the aid of dogs, but the difference was made up by people either just hunting what we call a spot and stalk, so they're not using any kind of hunting aids. They're just trying to find a mountain lion and then harvest it that way. And then the other portion of that would be trapping.
Trapping was also legalized in the 2023 bill. Hunters can use lethal or foothold traps to capture the animals. The DWR will continue to monitor cougar harvesting rates and may recommend changes in the future. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And the founder of Dolly's Bookstore on Park City's Main Street died last week. Her friends remember her love of books, animals, and fun. She was just shy of 94 years old. She grew up in the Salt Lake Valley and attended the University of Utah. While Dolly's is foremost a bookstore, longtime employee Liza Simpson says it always sold more than just books.
We loved hearing the stories of when she first started the store, which was it was books and women's clothing because you couldn't make enough money on one or the other to stay in business.
And Dolly was one of the first people that Terry Orr, who went on to serve as editor of the Park Record, met when she moved to town in 1979.
She took me right in, and I said I was trying to be a writer, and she said, "You're already a writer. You don't try to be a writer, you're a writer." And it was so lovely, her confidence. She was someone who enjoyed all kinds of books, which you would think would be obvious with a bookstore, but it's not always, you know? She was a reader of everything.
Longtime friend Carolyn Meyer says that Dolly was always up for fun. Some Parkites may recall the annual float in the Miner's Day Parade that featured a trailer filled with scantily clad women holding onto cocktails and hay bales as they came down Main Street. The float was titled Dolly's Deer Valley Doze.
Yeah, for about 3 years, and Nan McPolin told us that we couldn't do it anymore. Well, she just said, please don't do it again. But we had so much fun, and every year we'd win.
Dolly is survived by her two children, their spouses, and four grandkids. The family's planning a celebration of life later this summer.